Welcome into another Vigilant Sports Pacers podcast. I have a special one in store for you today. A guy that's worn many hats. You probably first knew of him down as a player at Indiana. Tom Pritchard had the dunk we all will never forget, of course. I'm sure that's brought up in every conversation with him. But he also worked for the Pacers in the sales department. How he's a Cavs fan. What's it like being a Cavs fan or a Cleveland sports fan? And what's next for him? He's got something up his sleeve that he wants to get into. So we'll hit all of that here on today's show. Tom, thanks for coming in, man.
Yeah, Scott, I appreciate you having me here. Excited to talk some sports with you. It's funny you mentioned the dunk because I don't believe there is any other story told when someone comes up to me. And I would say one out of every five people actually get the team it was against correct. A lot of guys think it was against Iowa because of Will's dunk before.
Yeah. It's Minnesota?
Yeah, it was Minnesota. Oh. Yeah, so you're right on. So you're one of five right there.
There we go. But I'll take it.
Yeah, a lot of guys thought it was Michigan, Illinois. I've heard them all. Mm-hmm. And I kind of just got to the point where I just stopped correcting people and just shook my head and said thank you.
Where you just get into the dunk and don't even worry about what team it was. Yeah, that was me. That was my dunk. It was one of my highlights of my career. And for fans' highlights, that's one of the first things they think about when they think about you and your career down there, obviously.
Yeah. It's definitely the first one. And I will definitely be pleasantly surprised the first day someone comes up to me and talks to me about something other than that dunk, that's for sure.
I was going to say, though, is that something you kind of own, though, also knowing that's part of your past? Like Watford, he's kind of just to the level where it's kind of annoying talking about that shot, but also could make him money, he's signing pictures, like you kind of have to own it a little bit.
I know, I haven't seen any dollars from that dunk quite yet, but still holding out on that. No, I mean, obviously anytime you have the IU faithful coming up to you, you gotta appreciate it. They're some of the best fans in college basketball, but I definitely put it in my top three, you know, with my 4 years there at IU. Obviously the VCU win in the tournament and the Kentucky win during that season are really high up there. So I would say those are a couple things that I definitely will never forget.
What was that Kentucky win like for you afterward? Phone blowing up, all your college buddies requesting your presence, whether it's at the apartment, at Kilroy's, at Nick's, family from home saying, hey, you did it. What was that like for you afterward?
I mean, once the shot went in, people were piling on Christian. Yeah. I remember for some reason my first initial reaction was to, oh boy, wow, he's getting tackled by a lot of people. So I'm trying to grab some people and like get him off the floor before he suffocates down there. But I just remember all the fans on the floor and how hot it was on the floor just because there were so many people. And obviously when we got back to the locker room, we poured some water on Crean. He did a little dance. Not much of a dancer he is, but when he's excited, he'll bust out some moves. But I actually had a lot of family in that weekend, and you know, like you said, phone was just blowing up with friends trying to get you out. I mean, I was beyond 21 at the time. Definitely thought in my mind, hey, let's go to some of the bigger bars, with all the fans. But it's actually kind of funny. We just had a couple of the guys on the team and my parents and some of their parents.
Oh, you didn't make it out that night.
Yeah. Well, we went out.
Later on.
later on. But we actually just went straight to kind of a Bloomington townie bar right there and just had just the basement all to ourselves and kind of just chatted and relaxed on the game a little bit. But, you know, obviously was watching ESPN and how that game definitely just kind of blew up.
Yeah, and we continue to see that highlight and the call, Dan Shulman or Fish calling it. It's one of the best. We'll stick with IU since we got started here. When you think back to your career, 4 years, it actually spanned the time that I was there as well. We had some classes together, but as a whole, it could be basketball or not. You look back at your time in Bloomington. What are the things you love about your experience down there?
Oh, man. I mean, Bloomington.
Where do you begin, right?
Yeah, it's a great place. I mean, obviously, I was in a tough decision. You know, Matt Roth and myself decided to stay with our commitment. Probably a lot of people would have rather had Devin Ebanks, and I think it was Terrell Hollowell, or he might have gotten in trouble or something at high school. But
you two are the ones that stuck by your commitment and honored it. And going into it, you knew it was going to be probably a couple rough years at least.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, going into it, I remember coming up, you know, showing up on campus after Crean had just gotten hired, and he was working out a couple guys. I think it was think it was like Jordan Crawford, Armon Bassett, and some of those guys. And then he called me a couple weeks later that those guys had really messed up and kind of told me that he had pretty much cleaned house there. I think we started either, you know, 3 to 4 freshmen when we first started that first year.
Couple baseball players on the team. Yeah. Kip. Can't remember the other
guy. Yeah, it was Kip and Eric and Kyle Tabor and Brett Finkelmeyer. Those were kind of the guys that we had to look up to. But, you know, I would definitely say that that first year at IU was probably one of the toughest years I've played basketball, you know, with the workouts and constantly going in every day. You know, I think we won 6 games that year. It kind of takes a toll on you, but it was definitely entirely worth it. I mean, the campus there is amazing. The people that are there are amazing. You know, I definitely would do it again if I, you know, had the chance to go through the recruitment again and go back.
And one of the cool things that you and many others got, not only did you get your bachelor's degree, but you got your master's degree while down there. Set you up nicely and for free.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Can't beat that.
Yeah, Matt Roth was kind of the first guy that, you know, started the trend there. And I know there were a couple guys after me that started it. But, you know, when you're down there in the summer working out every day, you know, you grab a couple classes. I graduated in 3.5 years and got another year and a half for free. You know, got my master's there, and it was definitely worth it. I you know, loved my time in Bloomington and, you know, got that sports administration. I originally think I wanted to get into, you know, maybe be an AD or something like that. But, you know, as maybe we'll touch on a little bit later, I've kind of changed my career path.
One thing I did want to hit on, totally different direction when it comes to IU, we talk about it on CBS Sports a lot, is the media and covering IU basketball and how it's very restricted. I'm curious, from a player's perspective, did you like how there was clear separation and you were kind of, if you had a big game or a notable thing, you were pulled in the room? Or would you like kind of what I'm used to in the NBA where media is allowed in the locker room? They talk to anyone. Mm-hmm. Come tournament time, you guys have that. Mm-hmm. And it can get chaotic then. Part of me thinks that sets you guys up and gives the other guys beyond the top two players maybe every single game more exposure, more coverage, and valuable experience speaking publicly.
Yeah.
There's a fine line there.
Yeah, it was a little tough. I will admit I was definitely one of those guys talking to J.D. Campbell about, I don't really want to speak to anyone after the game.
Oh, so you didn't want to anyway.
No, not much, but that okay. You know, if I had to look back at it, I kind of regret that a little bit. You know, I've always been a shy guy. I think my first class summer going into freshman year there was public speaking. I think I was the only guy in the class that got a B, but I like to think I've gotten a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, it's a little tough.
There's the talk, even in the pros, that it's kind of the player's sanctuary, but at the same time, us in media have jobs to do. It's not like we want to go in there and hang out. I think in all sports, it's best to get the complete story by getting to know the guys a little bit better.
Yeah.
And even if I'm not going to quote you in a story, I could run something by you. What did you think? Did I see this correctly? It allows us to gain a better perspective of what we're seeing, what we're analyzing. And in turn, I think that serves the fans a little bit better. But it does weigh more than on the locker room. You guys maybe can't change right away, et cetera.
Yeah. I think it's definitely a lot better to get the story right, obviously, and kind of get to know the guys a little bit better. You know, even when I was working with the Pacers, I would still see some of those guys around, mm-hmm. You know, yourself as well. And I definitely kind of remember those guys and all the interviews and everything. I definitely think, you know, with all the interviews and everything that we had to do, you know, associated with college basketball media-wise, it's kind of helped me out, you know, speaking and kind of helped me out with my future as well. So, you know, when I was a kid, freshman, sophomore year, obviously I didn't like it too much.
That was probably the last thing you wanted to do. You were thinking about what you're doing Friday night, or you had to get in the gym and shoot 100 free throws or something.
Yeah, I definitely needed to shoot a couple extra free throws. But, when you're in assembly hall all day or, you know, cook hall all day, I think the last thing at you know, 9, 10 o'clock, whenever the game is, 11, the last thing you want to do is kind of talk to people. And then, you know, obviously you got to call your mother on the phone after after the game as well that night. So a lot of people you're talking to, and by the time, you know, practicing the game and talking to everybody's over, you're just, you know, laying in bed ready to get started for the next day.
How often are you able to make it back to Bloomington to see friend, or most of our friends are really gone, but you might have some within the basketball program or football game?
Yeah, now that I'm a little older, haven't gone back much.
You got Derek there, I guess.
Derek is there now. I got recently engaged to a beautiful young woman that actually went to Michigan, so we went to the Michigan-IU football game this year that went to overtime. And
funny story about this, I saw Tom in the airport en route to, where'd you do it? Would you propose?
Oh, yeah, we were going to Cabo.
In Cabo. In Mexico. So I randomly see Tom in the airport. I was traveling for IUPUI. Run into him. So with this girl, I think a buddy maybe, or someone else.
It was Steve Mickness was randomly on our flight as well. Another guy with the Pacers.
So it's just you two.
So it was just kind of random that we run into him and we ran into you.
I think on Facebook 2 or 3 days later, engaged. I go, wonder if that's all he was thinking about. Don't mess this up. Do I have the ring?
Yeah.
Is everything okay?
I was extremely nervous. Obviously traveling international, and I also had a kind of a light jacket that I had it in a sunglasses case, and I think I got up for a second and she got cold and put that jacket over her. So I was I was freaking out a little bit there, but as soon as we got there, I was like, all right, let's go check out the beach. And she's like, no, I gotta get ready, we're going to dinner, we're doing all this. I was like, we'll just go to the beach. And and I had to kind of get it over with right away to relieve some stress. But
That's all you'd be thinking about.
But
I haven't gotten that position yet, but man.
it'll come. But I don't think she would have heard the end of it if I you would have been able to pull out that game. She's a pretty big Michigan football fan, that's for sure.
Teammates with Corey Barnett, obviously. I have to tie in for a different audience here. Did you have any relationship or know Ben Higgins at all while you're down there? How much did you hang out with him? Because Corey, I see all over his Instagram, he's buddies with Ben.
Yeah, so Corey and Ben, I think, were friends in high school, so that's kind of how we became friends. You know, he was obviously around the guys a ton. I actually haven't really stayed too much in touch with them, whether, you know, basically kind of just following each other on Instagram as our conversations now. But there is one story that I always tell everyone, because I tried to watch as much as The Bachelor as I could, but it's kind of a brutal show for me. I'm not too much of a fan, but we were having a fantasy football draft at our place. I think it was either junior or senior year, and Corey just comes barging in and says, Ben was just hit by a car. And I shouldn't be laughing. It was kind of a serious matter, but he kind of laughed it off. And it was somewhere on College and maybe 10th or 11th Street.
Okay.
And he got hit by a car and kind of ruined our fantasy football draft. But thankfully, he was all right. He actually was, you know, pretty close to, I think it was hitting the electrical box there right next to all the lights. Yeah, and who knows
what could have happened after
that. And I saw an article that he kind of had, and it was like 20 things that you don't know about me. And sure enough, he put that, I got hit by a car in college on there. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. But besides that, haven't really, unfortunately, haven't stayed too much in touch with him lately.
So after your career at IU, looking for jobs, you land with the Pacers. How does that come about? And why'd you decide that would be a good gig for you?
Yeah. I think the main goal is to stay in sports. Like I had mentioned before, I thought, you know, I would get into sports administration or something, or, you know, become an AD or something like that. And, you know, after I'd finished my master's there, I wasn't exactly, you know, once again, 100% sure what I wanted to do. I just knew that I wanted to do something, you know, revolving around sports. And I got in touch with a guy named Jim Morris, who's the president there at the Pacers.
Formerly
at the
time on the board of trustees.
Yeah.
I think he was still on was on at the time in 2012. Either way, he was
probably
involved with the program and the university.
He was very well connected, and he definitely loves his Hoosiers. And I kind of went over there with him, had, you know, a 30-minute conversation with him, and, you know, he kind of just laid out, you know, we have this starter program that involves sales. And, you know, I kind of thought to myself, you know, sales is pretty, you know, could be something that's a wide variety if I'm looking to go into, you know, marketing or something else.
It's kind of that first step,
especially, you know, with ticket sales, you're on the phone all day. So it would help me out a little bit with my, you know, conversation skills and plenty of other things that I think have, you know, will probably help me here in the future. But, you know, as we'll probably talk a little bit more about, I had to close the book on my sales career mm-hmm. there. I think I was there with the Pacers for 3 seasons, absolutely loved it, and I was kind of ready to move on to the next thing.
What's it like? What's the challenge of cold calling individuals, businesses every single day?
Yeah, it's extremely tough. When I first started there, the first group is called consumer sales, and you're basically just getting, you know, a list of Ticketmaster buyers from the previous season.
And it's just ticket if someone bought one ticket to a game or they went to a couple games. You know they're interested in the team, you just don't know how much.
Yeah, you could see how many tickets and how many games they went to, and, you know, obviously the, you know, 1 or 2 out of 10 you're going to get is someone that just came into town for something. So mm-hmm. going to be a tough sale to get, you know, Bob from Alaska to come back to Indianapolis. Yeah. But, you know, a couple others are just, it's kind of hit or miss. You know, something that they do in the ticket sales department there, my guy, Charlie Sloniker, was all about prep and practicing. And he had, you know, sales scripts on sales scripts that you're reading through. But it definitely was tough. I think when I first started there, there was 10 of us, and I think I was 8th, 9th, or 10th on the board for about the first 3 months.
And that's tough to swallow for a competitive guy that's been in sports all his
yeah,
life.
Yeah, it was really tough. And then once I started, you know, obviously no sales, prior sales experience, once I started to learn a little bit, I bumped all the way up to second, and then I think I ultimately nice. Finished 3rd out of 10 that season. Was able to get the promotion and the group sales, and that kind of took a little bit more. And calling on schools, you know, youth basketball groups, businesses, and other things like that. So not much more of the consumer. I think the consumer would probably be the hardest part.
Which is why it's that starter job, because yeah. they know those individuals have to earn their first job, and so we'll give them the toughest challenge.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's definitely the thinking there. They want to have them go after the small fish, and if they mess up a couple
of calls. And that's another thing, yeah, because I'm sure you had calls just like everyone else where you didn't say it right or you presented info poorly or inaccurate and you had to go back to them, or you just didn't sell them on the product.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think a lot of it is not only being able to read the script but not sound like you're reading it, and also knowing the team, because you're probably, I would assume, getting questions about why Paul George did this or this coaching decision, and you have to easily maneuver around that.
Yeah, that's definitely a tough thing that, you know, the sales team has to deal with. You know, you mentioned Paul George that day that, you know, unfortunately he went down and broke his leg. It was a very, very sad day in the ticketing department. You know, they're one of the, you know, not a lot of teams will offer, you know, their fans a full complete refund of their season tickets if they decide not to do it. And I think the Pacers always have been that, you know, happy to be in this city and mm-hmm. are, you know, more than
so
willing
to be flexible.
So you
had people calling, knowing Paul's not playing this year, give me my money back, and you guys did.
Oh, yeah, we had plenty of guys wow. that were, you know.
That last point is the one I'm surprised at, the giving money back.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're committed, and just like if, I'm making it up, but the Pacers landed a big star, then you got everybody jumping on. I wouldn't expect then the team to do the opposite of that and saying, hey, we booked you in at $10,000 for the year. It'll be $20,000 if you want to keep your commitment. You know, yeah, going the other
yeah.
way.
Yeah, it was tough.
That's respectable, though.
There was a lot of guys that day that had bought new houses or got a new job or
how many
somehow
of those,
needed their money
back. I was
going to
say, how many of those 1 in 10 they
would
actually
say, yeah,
got
I would
out.
Say 1 in 10 actually were like, yeah, I'm canceling because Paul is not playing this year and you can give me a call next year. Mm-hmm. A lot of other people were just, you know, making up some
but the,
some
the
funny
BS
stories.
Excuse, it's like, well, my lawnmower died and I had to get a new AC, so my wife said, we can't get tickets this
yeah,
year.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Paul got injured 3 days ago. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was definitely tough to swallow, but, you know, obviously it's taking, you know, we're half, you know, half salary, half commission, so, you know, when Paul goes down, yeah. that's taking out, you know, a good amount of money. You know, from the sales reps there. So it was definitely a tough year. And it kind of just depends on, you know, how well the team is playing and how many tickets you're able to sell, kind of, you know, basis on how much money you're going to make that year.
How many people called you up, didn't realize initially who it was, you introduced yourself, and then wouldn't stop talking to you about IU basketball?
Honestly, I originally thought that there would be a lot. I would put it kind of in between, you know, no one and a ton of people. But I definitely had a lot of people just kind of call me out of the blue and just want to chat with me.
I mean, early on, back when he was active on Twitter, you even got Tom Crean to shout out, if you need Pacer tickets, call Tom Pritchard at 317-917, whatever.
Yeah. I just kind of gave him a call and asked him if he would do a favor for me. And, you know, he obviously said he would do anything. And he sent out that tweet. And obviously there were a couple prank phone calls, but I think I ended up selling, you know, maybe 6 or 7 people that day.
Good.
So I was pretty thankful for that. But kind of funny when, you know, guys will just kind of call up and chat with you. And then, you know, when I'm 5 minutes in, I'm like, so are you interested in Pacers tickets at all? It's like, oh, not really.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm sure my manager was happy that my talk time was up that day, but it wasn't necessarily talking about Pacers tickets. Mm-hmm.
Well, on game night, I see you all the time around walkie-talkie. This last year or two, you're always leading groups down for halftime, I think. What's your role, or was your role, on a typical game night?
Yeah, most with group sales, there's 3 busy times. One's pregame, and then halftime and postgame. You know, usually you're just kind of working with, you know, all these different kinds of departments on that specific game day, you know, working with the guys on the court, you know, whether it's a school doing a check presentation, you know, getting these kids to this specific spot. Sometimes that's a little bit harder with some younger kids.
Yep, because they're probably just looking around, trying to soak in the environment. Maybe they see a player on the other team walk by.
Yeah,
no, come over here. Come on. Down this tunnel, line up one by one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one of my favorite things to do was the visitors tunnel club. It was about 20 kids or adults. It would kind of depend, but they would high-five the visiting team out of halftime.
Yep.
And I remember you had to line them up on the court, and then the sales reps, either if it's one or two, would kind of have to stand in the middle and point the visitors to go through. And this was kind of a problem with the sales reps until I got there. I kind of prided myself on, I had a little hit list. I think there were 2 guys that got through on me. One was Chris Bosch. I just wasn't paying attention. And then the other
one. You're a big guy where it's like no one's just going to walk right through you.
Yeah.
They see you in the way.
I think,
you point. Okay, whatever. I'll go through the line. Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
That's why I had a lot less numbers than the other sales reps over there. But the second guy was Kevin Garnett. And I remember making eye contact with him and just going, uh-oh.
He is the – I've talked about this all the time. In my ball boy days, for 10 years, the worst individual to work with.
Wow.
So that does not surprise me.
Yeah.
All that. Whatever.
Yeah. He
wants no part of whatever you're doing, even if it's for kids and a good cause.
Yeah.
That's not him.
Didn't say a word, just head down and walked right through us.
Yep.
But, yeah, I was – you know, only 2 guys, and I think it was 2 or 3 years. So
that's impressive.
I'll still take that. I think we mentioned him before, but Steve Mickness let an entire team go through one time, and the kids weren't too happy about that.
How much crap was he getting the next day in the office?
Well, I actually think it was the Cleveland Cavaliers. So I printed out a photo of each player and put it on his desk.
You guys have a lot of pranks and fun. If it's someone's birthday, you litter their whole desk. It seems like a lighthearted attitude in there. When you're not focused on calls, then you guys go out, and that's one of the things I really appreciate about the sales and marketing staff is it seemed like you were together, and I think that's important in getting a job done, especially when for a team.
Oh yeah, definitely. Everyone was very close. Obviously, you have the fun pranks that you would play around the office, but you know, if you're just sitting on your phone for 8 hours constantly just dialing phone numbers, you're not going to be at your best at all times. I think you know, the guys would always say, you know, a world-class sprinter can't, you know, sprint an entire marathon. So, you know, we would go on specific call hours usually when, you know, we knew people would be able to pick up the phone. And then if there's a, you know, a 15-minute, 20-minute break here or there, you know, we'd like to have fun in the office. That was for sure.
And you have to. Well, recently you made the decision, All right, let's move on from this and go into something I'm more passionate about in coaching. Explain exactly the decision, maybe the challenges that went into that, and now what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I selling tickets for 3 years, obviously, I did enjoy it. There were a lot of ups and downs, and I kind of just thought to myself one day that I wanted to get back onto the court, and I had missed basketball a ton. I had done it 7 days a week for however long when my parents put that basketball in my hands as a kid.
Something about trading that daily suit and tie for workout clothes and working for a common cause to make others better.
Yeah, definitely. I think, my high school coach, my grade school coach, Tom Crean, everyone always said I was very coachable. So I think that, being a coachable guy and be able to learn so much that, I can use that and help other kids kind of progress with their games. Moving on, getting into coaching is obviously something a little bit more passionate about than, making cold calls sitting at a desk from 8 to 5. But I'm really excited to kind of just, close the book on sales there. Mm-hmm. Whether I have to reopen that book when I'm recruiting kids to, wherever I'm at.
Yeah, you got
to
have a sales pitch then.
Yeah, so I'll definitely have the experience there, but, kind of just really excited to start a new chapter in my life and get back onto the court and be able to help people.
You were explaining to me before we recorded how you had some previous work this past year at a local high school.
Yeah, I helped at Bishop Chittard with their JV and varsity team this year. Obviously, I was working with the Pacers as well, so it was kind of a 2 to 3 times a week thing, and I absolutely loved it. We didn't have the best season that we really expected to have that year, but I had a lot of fun coaching those kids, and I know they'll go on to do bigger and better things. And I'm just kind of right now trying to get my hand in anything at this point. I've definitely realized how hard it is to get into college coaching. Mm-hmm. And it's 100% about who you know at this point. And I'm hoping that's what this summer is going to be about. I'm obviously still connected with Chittard and helping out at Guerin Catholic with a guy named Pete Smith up there, who's really well connected. I'm going to be working the Indiana basketball camps here in the next couple of weeks. Actually going to be working the Jordan Holes' camp as well.
Nice.
At Bloomington South. And then we had mentioned him before, Corey Barnett out at UCLA. Going to go down to L.A. for my first time.
See the Dobo
camps
out there? Is that right?
I knew that he was the video coordinator before, and then I think the Alford son that just graduated took that position. I think he might be a player development guy now.
And that's become, you're right, director of scouting and player development. But that role as player development, I think we'll see the Pacers, if not this year, in the next couple of years, add player developmental guys, maybe IU the same way. That's become a route some people have chosen to go.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that a lot. Applying to these certain jobs that I'm able to find online, a lot of different schools have them, whether they call it, player development or whatever they would like, special
regardless
assistant
of,
to
yeah, regardless of assistant or player development, you're on the court and you're working to make guys better.
Yeah, definitely. I think that would be, it's obviously something I would be very interested in doing. And I think that's kind of a main goal to look into. Obviously without any collegiate coaching experience, mostly playing experience, with a lot of guys that I've talked to, I think something that would be attainable would be, I'm looking more at the, video coordinator, player development type role, which ultimately scales up to, director of basketball operations and assistant coach and kind of going from there all the way up to a head coach. But, obviously you have to start somewhere. I've yet to been able to use this yet in an interview, but I will say the last, sales rep from Indianapolis, Brad Stevens turned out pretty well.
You're right, so, yeah. Eli Lilly, absolutely.
So, yeah, I'm not saying I'm going to be the next Brad Stevens anytime soon, but I think it would be something to kind of let off a little steam
but
if
you,
I was interviewing.
You got to use that in the interview.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, don't make this mistake. this guy worked for Eli Lilly. He wanted to coach. Started as a volunteer and then worked his way up. Yeah, and we former Pacers coach Frank Vogel. Still feels weird to call him former coach. But Frank Vogel, Eric Spoelstra down in Miami, those guys came from the video room and worked their way up, scouting roles and assistant coach, and then blossom into becoming a head coach.
Yeah, everybody's got to start somewhere. And, you know, I'm kind of just starting here in Indianapolis, great city. I've made it my new home here and kind of just starting out, helping out with some high school kids and kind of working my way into college basketball.
Is that kind of the thing you're imagining that you're going to have to do is just work various camps, meet more people who then could turn you on to another guy who might have an opening? Is that kind of the mindset you have right now?
Yeah, that originally I kind of just wanted to, you know, get kind of like a small, you know, coaching circle and apply for some jobs that I see online. And I've quickly realized that that's definitely not the route to do it.
The thing I wonder with all those job postings is you got to make sure yours is seen. It's not that you're hired. It's that your resume is seen because for a decent job, you might have 150 people apply for it. And you want to be one of those, what, 5, 10, 20 even consider?
That's true. That's why I kind of, you know, especially with Pete Smith, he had kind of known a guy that I had applied with. So I kind of, you just have to know a bunch of people to get that in. And I've also even realized pretty, you know, lately I talked with a guy, Pete Kaler, that used to coach at Michigan. He's from, you know, the Cleveland area, went to school with his sister. And he said, you know, 85 to 90% of the time when they post those jobs, it's already been filled.
It's just a formality.
Yeah, it's just a formality to put that up there. So
I know another job in town here in Indy where it was posted. It looked like it was filled, and the coach still hadn't even began to process the candidates.
Yeah.
So it's a formality.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely. Either it's someone on the staff that they already have, whether it's a manager graduating or something like that, or a GA, or it's, you know, one of their top friends that's also in coaching is recommending someone to them. So that's why I'm kind of staying in touch with as many guys that are well-connected as possible. Obviously, Coach Crean and Tim Buckley and everybody still at IU that were there when I was there, and I'm, you know, just reminding them constantly. And I'm taking these summer camp opportunities, obviously, as just kind of like a networking event.
Absolutely.
As, you know, any normal, you know, business person would do, would just go to a networking event, and that's kind of what these summer camps are going to be. I know there's going to be a lot of other guys that are, you know, outside of the program from IU that would be associated with basketball in some way that I can connect with them. And then obviously at UCLA, only kind of knowing Corey out there, looking forward to, you know, meeting Coach Alford and everybody out there as well.
Long term, if you had it your way, are you more of a college guy, or would you eventually like to get to the pros?
I definitely see myself as a college guy just because, you know, I had played in college. And, you know, as much as a lot of guys, you know, going on the road and things like that and being away from your family isn't, you know, the best situation, you know, especially in college, you're moving around a lot. I think it would be something that, you know, I'd feel a lot more confident coaching college basketball than I would with the pros. And that could, you know, obviously very well change whether if I have a college coaching job and, you know, going to see, you know, summer leagues in the pros and learning from other people over there. But just I want to be, you know, as confident and as knowledgeable as possible. So I think where that is right now would be at the college level.
Last thing I wanted to hit on in total with you is your fandom for Cavs basketball, because it's very clear. You'd see you rocking Cavs jerseys around Bloomington campus, or still, you know, rushing home from Pacers to catch the end of the Cavs game. Being from Westlake, Ohio, just a big Cleveland sports in general fan?
Oh, yeah. Definitely a big Cleveland sports
fan. Because that
doesn't
come easy either.
It does not come easy. Actually, just won their first championship since 1964. Not a lot of people know this. The AHL Lake Erie Monsters have won the Minor League Hockey Cup.
I guess you guys have to hold on to something.
We got to hold on to something because it hasn't looked great lately. But, yeah, just a Cleveland fan of, you know, every sport, obviously. I wasn't, you know, too old when the Browns were, you know, very good, or the drive, the fumble. I think I'm not even sure if I was born during those times, but obviously was a big baseball fan when they lost in 95 and 97. And then, of course, a lot of people probably don't know this one, but in 2007 they were up 3-1 to the Red Sox to go to the World Series and lost three straight. So I'm hoping that that happens to the Warriors here soon.
What was your reaction, and you think the overwhelming majority of Cleveland's reaction to LeBron coming home? Was it, we're happy, but we got to remove some scars a little bit?
Yeah, I think, you know, the casual basketball fan and, you know, the casual LeBron fan was extremely excited. But, you know, obviously I was excited as well because I know what comes with LeBron, and that's, you know, people coming into the city, you know, building more buildings. He's kind of like the guy that, you know, raises the economy there in Cleveland. And obviously you have, you know, Kevin Love does not sign a contract extension with, you know, Anthony Bennett or whoever would have been in Cleveland.
Yeah, he's not traded if GM LeBron James doesn't get there.
Yeah, so there's obviously guys coming. I'm at 99% of forgiving him. I've always said that he has to win me a title to completely forgive him.
And that's probably how most fans are. They like the winning. They like how it's boosting the local economy and maybe bringing more businesses there. But
yeah,
he did leave.
There is just that 1%, and there have been rumors again that he's leaving again.
What do you think? I can't see it. Not in the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what he would, you know, leave to do. I mean,
it would be if Cleveland just isn't enough. He just doesn't have the pieces.
Yeah,
right.
Hopefully that's not the case.
When he went back, my thought was he's just going to retire there. But then there was that story about he wants to play with his buddies. And so I think he might team up. I'm saying Miami because it's a fun, warm city. Maybe it's the Clippers or the Lakers. If LeBron wants to do it, it's going to happen, right?
Yeah, it does worry me a little bit because I think when him and D-Wade and Bosch first started talking about teaming up, I think he spoke to Chris Bosch first and had mentioned, you know, why don't you just come to Cleveland? Or this, I believe it was a rumor. I don't know if it was 100% true. And Chris Bosch kind of just said, no way, and signed with Miami. And then, you know, LeBron kind of just followed suit with those guys. I think LeBron really did want to stay in Cleveland. I think that's, you know, a reason why he came back. But, you know, like you had said, a lot of stories about him wanting to play with his buddies. You know, but if I could talk to LeBron, I would tell him, you know, you guys can just play in your rec league when it's all over. You guys can just make a team. No need to do it now.
Is Cleveland a likable team? This currently constructed team, is this a likable team?
Oh, man, I don't know if any LeBron team is a likable team. It's kind of tough to say. Obviously, I think the most likable team, and, you know, when we were growing up, the most likable team was the Chicago Bulls. Everyone was a huge Bulls fan. You know, I even, you know, watched the Bulls and was a big fan. Not bigger than the Cavs.
But you could appreciate what they were doing, and kind of like what we are all doing, I would say, with the Warriors right now.
Yeah.
Although Draymond's kind of ruined it a little bit, I think, for some people.
I think, you know, when you see kids walking around, like when we were our age, you would see a bunch of Jordan jerseys. Yep. And now, you know, the younger kids
it's
are all
Steph
wearing
and
Steph
Under
Curry
Armor.
Jerseys.
It's amazing.
And it's good for the sport, and it's good for Under Armour because, you know, they've obviously blown up with Jordan Spieth and Steph Curry. But
Cam Newton.
But it is tough to watch, you know, some of these kids at these camps just chucking up threes from not even touching the rim because they just don't have the strength yet to do it. I think, you know, Steph Curry has created a lot of bad habits in some of the younger kids, but, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of kids out there that are going to, you know, who knows, might be able to shoot the ball as well as he can. So that's also a positive as well.
I even know many people that don't like LeBron. He makes his fair share of mistakes, but how can you not? I'm just enjoying, this kind of sounds bad, but I'm enjoying his greatness. I'm trying to appreciate it, I guess. Now, I don't like J.R. Smith. Shumpert, I can't get involved with. Kevin Love is just a misfit there. I like Kyrie and LeBron together, but I think the rest cast of characters just doesn't gel well together. Otherwise, they would have a real chance in this series.
Well, I'm obviously hoping that doesn't happen. You know, when they went down 3-1, I think my hopes were almost
crushed.
Gone. And then I got a special alert from ESPN saying Draymond was out. And it kind of reminded me why they call it Believe Land.
Glimmer of hope.
That's why they call it Believe Land, because we're going to believe until that final game and until it's over. But, you know, if we continue to get performances out of LeBron and Kyrie like this, you know, I can obviously see them extending it to game seven, even just to have the shot to win the finals, just to even be in a game and game seven for the finals would be, you know, tremendous for the city and the team. Obviously, if they won it, it would be a parade for weeks, a year.
I think you might move back there for the week if that happened. Because you go back often. You were there this past weekend, right?
Yeah, I was there this past weekend for a wedding, and I'm going back for my sister's high school graduation party. So I go.
She's not going to be a Hoosier, is she? Or is it college graduation?
No, she's not going to be a Hoosier. No. She's going to a small school in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So took a different route. She's pretty tall, like myself, around 5'11", 6 foot, but only played basketball in high school and kind of didn't want to pursue that a little anymore. So I was the only one in the family that played basketball in college, obviously the tallest, and my brother didn't quite get all of the genes. I think he's about 6'2", and so is my dad. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to the Cavs. I have, you know, I think game seven is that Sunday, and I have IU basketball camp Monday, so I won't be able to go back. But I'm thinking
Coach Green might excuse you for that, knowing how passionate you are. Although maybe something you still need to be at because it's more for you than anyone.
yeah. I if it was a Browns Super Bowl, because that's very less likely, I think I would, you know, call Coach and maybe skip the first day of camp. But you know, obviously trying to pursue my next career option, I think it would be in my best interest to miss the first day when you're, you know, meeting all the new coaches and everyone involved with the camp. But I'll definitely have a big smile on my face that first day, you know, win or loss.
Well, we wish you luck with your coaching career. It's fun seeing you around. We never really got extended time to talk throughout Pacers and everything, but you're there 3 years, obviously your career at IU, and now hopefully moving into coaching and finding a permanent role there. Wish you the best of luck, Tom.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
If you haven't done so already, subscribe to the Vigilant Sports Pacers podcast on your favorite podcast player like iTunes, like Stitcher, like Spotify. We'll have you covered. Click subscribe, and when a new one is posted, you'll immediately be alerted. My shout out for this week goes number one to Paul George for continuing to cash checks. He added Jeep to his mega list of endorsements. He's now on the cover of NBA 2K17. He appears in two summer commercials for Jeep. He's in a new spot with other NBA stars celebrating the 20th season of the WNBA. And recently, he appears in a new Gatorade commercial. Another shout-out goes to George and Robert Mathis for hosting yet another great celebrity softball game. I always enjoy that, where the proceeds go to the Indiana Children's Wish Fund. It's one of those annual events that I look forward to every single year. Last shout-out goes to Nate McMillan for bringing back Dan Burke and Popeye Jones. While it has not yet been made official, McMillan confirmed to us the other week at the celebrity softball game, in fact, that he will keep Dan Burke and Popeye Jones on staff and that he's finalizing his final assistant spot. That'll do it for this episode of the Vigilant Sports Pacers podcast. I have another very special one in store for you coming up later this week. I hope you enjoy. Have a great week, everyone.